Radio.
Obviously, given the choice, I'd rather piss in the toilet. But when you and I are like doing this podcast, we're having a conversation, and I got like a bunch of beer cans next to me, and I got to take a piss, I'm just going to stop talking, let you talk for a little bit, and I'm going to probably fill those beer cans with piss. It wouldn't be the first time I fucking pissed into a can while fucking recording this fucking show. Because like a lot of people don't know is like that the episodes are much longer than you would expect them to be. Because I do a lot of editing on the back end. Me and Jay just shoot the shit a bunch of the time. And sometimes you're just having a good conversation. And you're like, man, I gotta pee, and like I could excuse myself, and then we'll lose our place, and this conversation won't be as interesting. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I've filled a can with my pee before and then dumped it out later.
So, as one does. I mean, that's just, you know, you gotta do what you gotta do.
Sometimes you gotta do what you gotta do, you know? So, a little bit of embarrassment for myself.
Welcome to Super Movie Brothers. Let's start the show.
Welcome to Super Movie Bros. I'm your host, Super Movie Brother Dave.
I'm your host, Super Movie Brother Jay.
And what a fun fucking episode we have for you guys. It's so fun. It's so good. You're going to love it. So we already released our The Suicide Squad review, but a little peek beyond the curtain, you know, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. We were actually recorded this episode before this episode, but this episode was meant to be a lead-in to that episode. However, I felt it was more important for us to get that review out before doing this. So if you're listening to this and you haven't listened to our The Suicide Squad review, then continue listening to this. Listen to this first and then go listen to our The Suicide Squad review. Or, you know, listen to them whatever order you want. I really don't care. But the point of me saying that is this episode, me and Jay are going to get into what are you watching? And then we will do kind of like a brief re-review or just a look back at the original David Ayer 2016 or Warner Brothers or Trailer Park. You'll find out about that little reference later on, where we'll talk about the original Suicide Squad towards the end of this episode. But Jay, just to kick things off, man, let's get into this week's fact.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
It's the search for fact, not truth.
All right, so this week's movie fact didn't come via voicemail like I wanted to. However, we did get a voicemail, and I will be playing said voicemail for everybody. But for movie facts, like I've asked everyone to reach out to us on the hotline, and you too can reach out to us on the Super Movie Hotline with your favorite movie fact or comments on anything from the show. And you can do that by calling 267-590-9042. That's 267-590-9042. And remember, if you share a movie fact, we will be doing one every week, and we will be choosing what person submitted the best movie fact that we liked and discussing it on the show, as well as giving you a sticker pack. So this one comes from Howard Pirette, and he said the 1980 movie titled Raise the Titanic built a 55-foot model of the Titanic in a special water tank to film it. The cost of that model was $8.3 million. However, the original Titanic, when it was built in 1911, leading up to its launch in 1912, was only $7.5 million to build. It's an interesting fact.
Hence why it fell and crashed.
No, no, hence why. Hence why, wow. It really, what you want to get into is inflation of cost, where the a 55-foot model of a ship costs more than
that
the actual
baffling.
Ship.
Did. That is baffling.
You know, just under 70 years later, essentially.
Good Lord.
So that's
I mean, that's movie production for you, baby. You know what I mean? The recreation of it. But one of the things I always found interesting about the sinking of the Titanic, and this goes into conspiracy theory realm, it's been often theorized that the Titanic was so costly at the time to build that its builder was essentially decided that the risk that the cost was not worth the return that they would get on such a fantastic cruise liner, and it was purposefully sunk for insurance reasons, because the guy who ran the company, I forget his name,
but how do you explain the survivors?
Hold on. The guy who ran the company at the time actually canceled his ticket and did not take the inaugural cruise of the Titanic, and people look at that as damning evidence that the Titanic was purposefully run into an iceberg, sending all of its passengers into the freezing cold waters of the Northern Atlantic.
Nah, well, that day and age, it was very easy to
or get away the with other theory ship, is that its sister ship, the Britannic and the Titanic, are both one and the same. And both ran aground. So the Titanic famously hit an iceberg, but the Britannic actually ran aground on a coral reef. It was actually damaged several times. There were three ships of the same size, and I believe one of them actually survived. I think it was the Olympic. Actually survived all the way up to World War II and was used as a merchant ship during World War II. Interesting facts about the Titanic. You can watch James Cameron shit about if you want to learn more about the Titanic. He did an entire like decade on the Titanic in his career. He was just like, oh, you guys like the Titanic? Well, guess what? I'm going to fund an entire mission where I go down and I look at the Titanic and I go, yep.
He likes to milk the gravy train.
There it is. Like, it's almost what he did. I remember watching that documentary and I was like, man, they're going to do something cool. And like, he goes down to the Titanic. He goes, yep, there it is.
Because what are you going to do? I mean, it is what it is. I mean, it's just fucking there.
Super cool doc, bro. It was actually an interesting documentary. But that's interesting. Just for cost of inflation alone and stuff like that. The fact that an entire cruise liner costs less than the model and the pool that was used to create the recreation of that thing. But to get into a really fun fact. This is one that I provided to Jay, and I always love this fact. One of my favorite movies from Quentin Tarantino is Django Unchained. I know I'm kind of like on the outside here, where my favorite Tarantino movies are Death Proof and Inglourious Basterds and Django, more so than, you know, his classics like Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction. Not saying I don't love those movies. I absolutely do. His newer ones are more akin to what I'm enjoying. But anyway, while filming Django Unchained, Leonardo DiCaprio was extremely uncomfortable using the N-word so much in the presence of Samuel Jackson. So much so that while filming scenes, Samuel Jackson could tell that Leonardo DiCaprio was uncomfortable and not delivering the type of performance that he would expect from him, especially given the fact that this dude smashed his hand on a table during a take into a glass, which sliced his hand. He then, like a badass, looked at it with glass sticking out of it, picked up a napkin, and wiped the blood from his hand and continued delivering his line. I believe he wound up with somewhere above 20 some stitches in his hand as a result of that.
Yeah, so, and it's in the movie. So
it's in the movie. It's the take forever that was used. Yeah. So Samuel Jackson, understanding that Leonardo DiCaprio was apprehensive about using the N-word, pulled him aside and said to him, "Motherfucker, this is just another Tuesday for us. Let's go."
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Leonardo DiCaprio, uncomfortable around so many black people on set using the N-word, that like Samuel Jackson had to remind him that like when other people use it against us, it doesn't feel good. But
we're on a movie set. You're playing characters. It is what it is. You know, like
you're not doing anything I haven't heard before. I've been called the word before.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's good old Sam, and you know, It's a fun little tidbit, just like with the Leo.
Yeah, it tells you a little bit about thing, Leo, you know, and what a nice guy he is, and like what you know, the type of person that he is and stuff. But it tells you a lot about Sam Jackson too, where it's just like he just wants the best performance. Call me whatever you want, you know what I mean? Just give us a good performance here. So I like that one. Jay, I think I should win my sticker, my our own sticker pack. I think I should.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just for that one.
Put it all over your car. All over your work laptop or something, you know?
Next week, I hope that someone leaves us a voicemail like our good friend did. Honestly, I don't know who this Google voicemail message is from. I have an idea, but you can never say 100% who it's from. But we got this voicemail message today, so I wanted to play it for everybody here.
I'm Commander Shepard, and I approve this podcast.
So I'm pretty sure that's Chris Brayton from the I Like to Like Things podcast. He recently did a post. Him and I are both big Mass Effect fans, and I just commented on his post because I believe his wife, he was replaying Mass Effect, and his wife was playing Mass Effect for the first time. So I commented on, I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite podcast on the Citadel, which is a line that your character can do in there because you're supposed to be like this big famous hero for the galaxy and stuff like that, for the Milky Way galaxy. And that's your thing. Like, you can get a discount for going to merchants and saying like, I'll do an ad for you. And they're like, fine, do an ad and I'll knock 20% off. So you could say like, you know, I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite armory on the Citadel. This is my favorite shop on the Citadel. So obviously.
Well, thank you, Chris.
He's kind of playing off my fandom for Mass Effect.
Sure, it works. Sure.
Because it works. So, all right, Jay, let's get into what are you watching?
What are you watching?
What are we watching?
He's trying to watch some illegal channel.
Oh, he's watching.
No, go past this part. In fact, never play this again.
RJ, what'd you get down to watching this week? We'll start with you.
Well, I got into watching the documentary that I've heard some buzz about over the last couple months, Val. It's now streaming on Amazon Prime.
Fuck, man. I wanted to watch it, and I just ran out of time with busy life.
You're going to really like this for many reasons.
I'll bet.
We don't talk about this guy very often.
I got wrapped up in watching the newest episodes of the Movies That Made Us, which has like Jurassic Park and stuff involved with it. That's what I got wrapped up in watching. I really like that stuff. So,
hey man, understand.
Val's up my alley. But since you're going to talk about it, I'm not going to waste everybody's time and talk about it next week, man.
Well, I would like to hear your brief impressions when you do watch it personally.
You would. I don't think everyone else wants to hear two impressions on it though. So,
yeah, maybe.
But
not.
Anyway, what's going on with Val? Like, I've heard a few people talk about it. You know, Take Two podcast, I believe, just had an episode on, and they said it was like, you know, absolutely fantastic. So,
and it really is, and it's one of those things where it's bittersweet, you know. But it's also kind of heartwarming at the same time.
Jay, would you say it's a bittersweet symphony that's coming? Try to make ends meet. It's Buck Cherry, right? Is that who it is? I don't know,
but I do need to download that song.
Bittersweet Symphony, but it's a 90s hit that we all love.
Yes. Yes. It's kind of like, kind of reminds me of like Sublime, you know, or something like that. Or
kind of like
Oasis, like Oasis, right?
Yeah,
Oasis,
or like
one of those things.
What was it? Rodney Dangerfield that did Paranoia, Paranoia, Everybody's Coming to Get Me.
Yes.
You said you never left me.
Everybody's
running
singing at the top of their lungs.
Sea.
Oh my God!
Who salutes, but no one ever does.
Those songs are like the anthems of my childhood.
Well.
Yeah, are more of my anthems of my high school age,
right?
But I mean, not like, my middle school. Middle school was like
peek behind
different.
The curtain. Like recently, I've been listening. Like I just went on Amazon Music and I was like '90s alternative, and I've just been listening to a whole bunch of like '90s alternative music. But Logan was in the car. And there's been quite a few songs.
I've listened to that quite a bit. And
there's quite a few songs.
It is kind of the same run-of-the-mill stuff. Like, I'm like, all right, enough with the teen spirit. All
right. Yeah, right, exactly. Like, I've heard Nirvana so much. I was trying to get deep into things like Candlebox and shit like that.
Yeah, like, give me some more Smashing Pumpkins or something.
And,
I don't know.
But Logan heard Beck, and she fucking loved the song because, like, I sang the lyrics to her. And it's like, you know, and time is a piece of wax that's dripping on a termite. It was choking on the splinters. Like, Logan loves these, like, crazy fucking lyrics. So, like, right, while I'm driving her home or picking her up, like, I'm singing these fucking songs to her. And she's just like, wait, who's this? And, like, I'm telling her and stuff. It's really cool to get my kid into, like, the kid, like the music that, like, defined my youth. You know what I mean? And then also listening to it and, like, listening to Green Day and just being like, you know, I went to a prostitute. And I was like, oh, man, now I'm now having to explain to my kid what a prostitute is. But also, isn't it cool that my kid listens to the same music I fucking loved growing up? Fucking love it. Anyway.
Stay on target. Stay on target.
Val, you were talking about Val. Before
so
we
get
so
get back to funny. Our boy Val.
We're Val talking about Kilmer. How late we're running, and we just keep rambling. So
Mr. Val Kilmer, unfortunately, has been diagnosed with throat cancer, came out on the other side of it, you know, through chemo and radiation and such like that. However, it still hindered his voice.
I saw a great like Instagram post of him putting on the cape and cowl, just the cape and cowl, not the whole outfit. And he like turns to the camera and he goes, "I'm Batman." And like he talks like, and I was like, "Oh fuck, that's right." He had throat cancer, and I was like, "But fuck it, I don't care. That's fucking Val Kilmer in the fucking Batman Forever fucking outfit. Fuck yeah."
You see, I'm both Bruce Wayne and Batman. Not because I have to be. Now, because I choose to be.
Yeah, and yeah, he's still, you know, he's going to have to talk like that for the rest of his life. And he does say, like, this is the most frustrating part for his life right now because it is a struggle to speak. And
yeah, motherfucker
you
had
know,
a silky smooth voice, too. So,
well, he definitely did. And his boy narrates this documentary who sounds eerily just like a young Val Kilmer. So it's kind of interesting in that way. But, and also the fact that Val does, by the way, is on the other side of it, like I said, and he is healthy and he does feel good. He good. Does feel like, unfortunately, he has to kind of, at this point in his life, live so much vicariously through his quote-unquote old life because he feels like he has nothing going on right now that people are interested in. So,
but we are.
Almost feels like,
but we totally are.
Yeah, but when you look at his filmography, honestly, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang is the only relevant thing that he's done since his diagnosis and everything.
I get
that,
it. Yeah, I mean,
or before or whatever. Like, and that's like 2003 or whatever. 2004.
But I think like nostalgia.
It's been
like,
a long time. It doesn't feel like it though.
I think nostalgia speaks a lot to like the culture that we have now, where so many of us that are creating stuff have nostalgia for the stuff from the past. So, I mean, like him just even doing like viral videos of him putting on the cape and cowl, saying "I'm Batman" and stuff like that. Right. Like that. That gets me a little bit excited because I'm like, you fucking were Batman.
Yeah.
You're not quote-unquote you know, my Batman. That will always belong to Keaton. But like, you are the second banana, you know?
I'm your Huckleberry.
I had no ill feelings about him.
Yeah.
He's not my least favorite. George Clooney's my least favorite.
I'm excited for his cameo in Top Gun, you know, 2, Maverick. Sure. Like, I'm excited for his cameo in that. So, like, you know what I mean? Like, I understand the dude's down about himself, but I think, like, you know, you look at things like The Saint, you look at things like Top, you know, especially Top Secret, something like that he's done way back in the day that's completely, you know, cult fandom and beloved and stuff like that. That dude has a lot to look back on and to be proud of.
I think he does
live on,
and I think that's exactly what you're getting to, where my point is. So this starts from the beginning in the early 80s when he's like the first person to get like one of these film cameras and document their life. He grew up on a Richie family kind of ranch with his brother who is creative, and they used to do a lot of home movies, film things, be very creative and quirky, and he was an early admin into Juilliard School for acting. So he was, you know, prominent in that kind of world and also a very infectiously animated type of character who also, again, throughout his whole fucking life, had a camera with him, for better or worse, throughout all these film productions, Top Gun, Batman, bad movies, good movies, everything. Life, divorce, marriage, you know, everything.
Divorce and again.
So you know, you really get a good scope of who he is. However, my knack of this movie was, they hint to, he was a prima donna. And I never knew this. This was kind of new to me. I didn't know that, like, Val Kilmer was apparently, like, a big prima donna film actor.
Well, it was also, like, kind of before our time of following movies deeply.
True,
also, pre-time of the internet.
This is pre-social media, exactly.
Right, that shit got out. You know, there's no... There's no Christian Bale video of him just going, you know, screaming at a guy on a set or anything like that.
And
fucking professional.
and they do a pretty good job at ultimately hiding that, but at the same time, you could tell that that was a factor, and I think that's a big part of why from 2000s on he pretty much. Didn't have the same kind of career he did in his 80s and 90s career. But again, highly engaging, especially for people in us in this kind of world. Like, this is a great glimpse behind the scenes of celebrity and the evolution of who people can be and how they are and family life.
You and I talk about this in the news like all the time. We're like, you know, word gets out. Like, word in Hollywood spreads, like, very fast. And I think, that's one of the things, like, the show Entourage always did, like, really well, was it's just like, no, word's out. This movie's going to be bad, and you're in it, and that's not good for you. Or vice versa, like, word's out that, like, you're fucking awful to deal with on set. Like, if you remember, like, I shared you that video of, which may come up as a fact later about Matt Damon, so I'll save that fact for another time.
That was a skit, dude. That's not real.
That was a skit where he was flipping
That's
set of Entourage.
That's not real. That's
okay,
a skit. Good.
It's
part
like
of Entourage, the show.
All right, good. Because that would have gotten out, like, if that was real. I watched Entourage series once.
Well,
so,
that's the thing. Like, it was kind of a spoof on his character. Like, you know, like, they did, like, they brushed that gray line, sort of like Curb Your Enthusiasm, where, like, you know, you're playing yourself, but you're not really playing yourself. Like, you're playing a bullshit version of yourself, you know, like Matt Damon is playing himself, directing something that
the character is
whatever.
In,
yeah. he's blowing off steam.
Like
I said, whatever,
it's been so long since I've seen Entourage. I couldn't
correct,
tell you one
correct
bit from it.
Right, right.
Other than Ari Gold saying, "Get the fuck out," which is one of my favorite gifts.
I miss Jeremy Piven. I loved him so much in that role.
But apparently he's not cast anymore because he's difficult to work with, which goes right back into Val.
Correct. Correct. Yeah.
So there you go. There's a segue for you, Jay. I know you love my good segues. So
there you go. Perfect.
Maybe touch yourself to that and send me pictures. There's a callback to a Patreon episode that we recorded this week. I'll blackmail you, baby. Anyway.
Sign up for $20 a month for that one.
For Jay's unsolicited dick pics.
We're soliciting. Don't be teasing false information.
So Val's worth the checkout on Amazon Prime, you're saying?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Perfect. So, Jay, I checked out something this week. It's kind of in line with, like, our reviews this week, where we're going to go back and talk about Suicide Squad 2016. We're going to talk about, obviously, The Suicide Squad, which was an episode that released before this. But I was like, oh, new DC animated movie. So they released, about a month ago, they released The Long Halloween Part 1, DC animated movie, which is based off of Jeff Loeb's and Tim Sale's Eisner Award winning comic book, which took place in the pages of Batman and went back and told a story that was somewhat a sequel to Frank Miller's Year One, and kind of told like a very early on story about Batman, where he's still somewhat dealing with the mob while also dealing with the burgeoning super villain class within Gotham, so much so that it's kind of a retelling of an origin story for Two-Face in the comic books. I decided not to watch like part one. I wanted to watch part one and part two at the same time, because in the past I had watched The Dark Knight Returns part one, and I was like, cool, it ends, I guess, at a logical point, and then like they gave us part two, and it's like I always felt like these stories were meant to be consumed at the same time. It's all part of a singular story, so why wait? You know what I mean? So anyway, it's just a point. It's just a way for Warner Brothers to make a little bit of money by releasing two DVD copies of a direct-to-DVD release. So anyway, I watched The Long Halloween, and I don't know whether because I've read the comics so many times, I found myself extremely bored by this DC animated movie. Now, it didn't do anything like Batman Hush did. And if you watch the DC animated, you know what I'm talking about, where they completely changed the origin of Hush by the end of the movie. That didn't really bother me so much. Or like the Long Hollow, or like the Killing Joke, where Batman's all of a sudden in a relationship and just completely fucking Barbara Gordon on a fucking rooftop and stuff like that. Like all this stuff where they change, it's like, it doesn't do anything egregious like that. It honestly, it does its best job at retelling a truncated story of The Long Halloween, which took place over 12 issues. And to me, I was just bored by it. I was a little bit bored by it. You know, Jensen Ackles does the voice of Batman. He does an okay job. It's fine. It's not Kevin Conroy. No one's Kevin Conroy. So I can't knock anybody for stepping into the shoes and giving it a shot. But it just didn't work. I believe Troy Baker is back as the Joker, and he's previously done the Joker in Gotham City Origins, which was like a Batman spinoff to the Arkham series, which Rocksteady was doing, but this one was done by WB Games. So it's someone who's competent, who's done the Joker before, but still like, and Josh Duhamel was the voice of Two-Face or Harvey Dent. And it's kind of like the story, you know, if you've read the comic book, then you know it, but it's kind of the story of a killer on the loose in Gotham who's killing mobsters on every holiday starting with Halloween. So it starts on Halloween in 1 year, and the story ends on Halloween the next year, which is 12 issues, The Long Halloween, and every month a new holiday, and that month someone was getting killed. It causes Batman and Jim Gordon to reach out to Dorian Day, who is Calendar Man, who kind of has an insight on killing people based on the calendar or holidays, and who you expect is the killer is not the killer that they ultimately reveal in the end. The movie has the same reveal that the comic book did. I just found myself bored by it. Honestly, I don't know whether it failed to pace itself going from the comic book version to this version, where like the comic book version, it weaves this extremely interesting, intricate detective tale and stuff like that. That's all built on mystery and smoke and mirrors and cloak and dagger. And like, I really enjoyed the comic book series. The comic book series, like I said, I've read a bunch of times. I love going back and reading The Long Halloween. The art is absolutely fantastic. This did its best job of doing the Long Halloween art without putting it in Tim Sale's style, which may be a little much for people to buy in animated form, you know, long term over a 2 hour long film. But they did try to like at least pay homage to it with like heavy black lines and, you know, the dark shading and stuff like that, with a little bit of like elongated faces like Tim Sale is kind of known for doing. But it still didn't scratch it. It did, the art just wasn't as interesting as I've gotten before. And it just wound up being, like I said, ultimately boring. Like, I was just bored by it. Like, Lauren was watching with me, and she goes, "This is a Long Halloween." I was like, "Yeah." And she goes, "Is the story, like, this boring?" And I was like, she read it on the beach, like, a couple years ago. While we were at the beach, I was reading other comics. I had brought that with me, and I always bring it with me when I go to the beach, because it's one of those comics that, like, I'll pick up, and I'll just reread, because it's fucking fantastic. And I handed it to her, and she read it. She goes, "It was really good." So we watched a movie together, and she goes, "That was boring." I was like, "It was, right? I don't understand why. It's really following like almost beat for beat the original story. It just felt like the pacing was just all wrong. I felt like they didn't take enough time to like to kind of like jump into, I guess, like the nuance that the comic book was able to deliver over 12 issues. So is it a recommend? I mean, I guess, I don't know. You have to pay money for it, so don't do that, for God's sakes. If you have HBO Max, all the DC animated movies seem to be coming to HBO Max relatively soon. So after their release. So just wait until it's on HBO Max. Give it a watch. Tell me what you think.
There you go.
I did rewatch two Suicide Squad animated movies, and they are exactly what they sound like. Suicide Squad animated movies. Slightly better than the 2016 movie. Not as good as the one we just got. So, but Jay, did you get down to watching anything else?
Nah, man, that's it.
All right. Well, then, Jay, let's get into our discussion on David Ayer's 2016 Suicide Squad.
I want to assemble a task force of the most dangerous people on the planet.
They're bad guys. Worst of the worst.
I can't wait to show you my toys.
Seriously, what the hell's wrong with you people?
We're bad guys. It's what we do.
Suicide Squad. Rated PG-13. Experience it in IMAX 3D. August 5th.
All right, so way back in the day, Suicide Squad became greenlit. David Ayer was tasked to direct. Me and Jay happily were like, yay. Let's go see this movie. We like David Ayer. He just made Fury. We like that movie quite a bit. Let's go check out this movie. David Ayer sets out to make a movie. He hires the cast that he wants. And they set out to make this based upon the popular comic that was made popular by John Ostrander in the 1980s as the writer, where it takes DC C and D list characters, villains, and puts them on a team and sends them out. There was a version of the Suicide Squad from the 1950s, but that was more of like science fiction fantasy more so than comic book. John Ostrander picked up the idea and kind of redid it in the 80s, making it very much part of the DC multiverse and stuff like that. And the idea was that anyone could die at any time. It wasn't until we got to 2004, 2005, later on, especially with the New 52, where we got the current incarnation of the Suicide Squad that we got with the movie, where we get like Deadshot and Harley Quinn and these recognizable characters from the comic books. So they're very much deriving their story from the 52 comics, but also David Ayer wanted to pay homage to Ostrander and what came before, but ultimately never really getting to do so, thus being picked up by James Gunn now, who did a much better job of paying homage to Ostrander and the 80s 90s version of the Suicide Squad. But anyway, and what wound up happening was Warner Brothers gets this movie Suicide Squad. They wind up getting the final copy of the movie and looking at it, and the movie's a mess in their mind, right? Mm-hmm. It's very much derived from their old way of doing things, which was very much based on Christopher Nolan and Zack Snyder with Man of Steel, grounding all their characters in extreme reality. Extremely dour, depressing, dark stories. That's not to take away from Christopher Nolan. Obviously, you know, his Batman films are absolutely fantastic. Man of Steel is what it is. A lot of people love it. A lot of people don't. I think I'm firmly in the middle of that camp where it's like, I like that movie. It's fine.
We said meh. M-E-H. Meh.
This comes out, and it's completely polar opposite of what is popular in the theaters at the time, which is a little movie from Fox called Deadpool. Deadpool costs X amount of dollars to make. Not a lot. Makes X amount of dollars. A fucking lot. And Warner Brothers looks at this completely dour movie that's almost like the shit that they've gotten before with Zack Snyder and Man of Steel, which made them money but was ultimately critically panned for the most part. And they decided, like, David Ayer is not going to get final cut in this movie. We're going to recut this movie. And who's going to do it? The people who did the trailer that got everyone excited for this movie, because the trailer for this movie got people fucking stoked. Bohemian Rhapsody playing over top of the introductions to the characters and the story and stuff like that. This type of pop culture, you know, music getting played over it, which they totally stole from Guardians of the Galaxy, because when this movie was originally conceived, it did not have any licensed music in it whatsoever. It was completely scored. And in the end, they wound up going with the licensed music thing because that's what they believed made Guardians of the Galaxy popular. And now they wanted to also make this more like Deadpool, make it zany, make it weird, give Captain Boomerang an obsession with fucking unicorns, and make Harley Quinn as insane as we possibly can, and let's give characters, let's completely truncate their stories and give them almost zero motivation to continue going on with this mission. But they'll do it anyway. Why? Because they decided they want to be good. Why? I don't know. Because they did. Plot points? Done. So ultimately, final cut was taken away from David Ayer and his cut and given to the group that made the trailer, like I said, and they were a group that was, ironically, for this show, called Trailer Park.
Go figure.
A group of young guys in Northern California, a group of youngins up in Northern California taking movies, cutting them down into fantastic trailers and putting them out there. They decided, like, these guys get what this movie's supposed to be about, or at least what executives wanted this movie to be about. Let's have them recut it and take the power away from the director completely.
The bus don't work on water
unless you've got power.
Bold move.
But not original, not anything that's coming from the material they were given. They were taking inspiration from outside sources and applying it to something that was in production before outside sources came out. And they decided, like, we need to try and be that. We need to try to keep up, which is ultimately what winds up being a movie's downfall. Because what the original Suicide Squad winds up being is a absolute tonal mess. Is it funny at times? Sure. Is it action-packed at times? You're darn tootin' it is. But does it make any sense for any of the characters? Does it make sense for the story? Like, does the story seem cobbled together? It absolutely does. Because it was a mess. 100%,
because it's a mess. On the cutting room floor. The editing, exactly. It's jumbled fucking mess. And on top of that, you have to say, CGI villains at this day and age should never exist.
No, 100%.
And they have, you know, one variant, I guess you could
CGI
say.
One
is
exist.
CGI, and the other one is like a hybrid.
Yeah.
But it's just, it on top of that, it incorporates with their action stuff being also CGI'd, and it just takes you out of it. And it just
also
looks so cheap.
Just to play devil's advocate, to Warner Brothers, who takes the director's cut away from Air, they were getting a lot of stories of shit that was going on set that Warner Brothers execs were not happy about. David Ayer allows his actors to just kind of like do what they want to do, but he also encourages like method acting and stuff like that. Jared Leto, totally down with that, winds up starting to play practical jokes on people leaving dead rats in places, sending pictures, unsolicited pictures
used
to people. Used condoms to Digimon Hansu, who is playing Killer Croc, which was not actually a used condom. He did come out and say it was all fake. None of it was real. But the entire idea of it was that he was embodying the idea of what the Joker was, and everyone was encouraged to get into like this method acting by David Ayer and stuff like that, which led to these type of things on set and allegations of sexual harassment and stuff, which Warner Bros. Was not happy with, and it was almost like David Ayer kind of like lost lost control of the set, not for bad reasons, because Warner Brothers execs were coming on the set all the time and trying to change this and change that. And, you know, he kind of lost control of their production as a result of it. One of the things that like was originally in the film was, I mean, we get the Suicide Squad. We get this version of the Suicide Squad from 2016, and we get introduced to each of the characters. In fact, the entire first 20 minutes is essentially introducing characters played with licensed music, right? The Sympathy for the Devil plays when Amanda Waller is meeting with two senators to kind of explain what Task Force X is going to be and stuff like that, to get their funding, to get their support. And obviously, Sympathy for the Devil, Amanda Waller, she's the devil, right? Like that's where they use popular music to tell us how we should feel. Where it's completely different in the new The Suicide Squad, where they use popular music that is actually happening in the scene. Like anytime a pop song is playing, they will at the end pull out and then show you that the actual characters are actually listening to that song right now. It's informing us about how the characters are feeling and not telling us how the characters should be feeling. Slight difference, but a major one, because what we wind up getting is different popular songs playing over top of each of the characters as they are introduced. Who's Deadshot? And literally on the right hand side of the screen, as you are introduced to each of the characters, you have to read a metric fuck ton in just under 20 seconds. You got to read the whole thing just to understand who each of them are. Several of them do get backstories and stuff, but we spend a lot of time doing flashbacks. And originally, there was supposed to be 40 minutes added to the beginning of this movie, most of it focusing on the Joker and Harley Quinn, but also getting in deeper to all these characters' backstories, which would eventually lead them to the point where they are when they are drafted into the Suicide Squad, giving them the motivation to be part of the Suicide Squad, and all of them have extremely sad stories. And apparently, the Joker was also a much larger role in the movie.
Are you sweet-talking me? I love this guy.
In fact, he was supposed to be there for the end fight against Enchantress or whatever the villain was supposed to look like at that time. And it also involved a whole lot more of Ben Affleck, Batman, which was not in the movie. So ultimately, everything's taken away from David Ayer based on all this stuff. And that's it. The movie was completely recut. Also, for the Joker, we were supposed to get a background for the damage tattoo and kind of alluding to the fact that Jason Todd or a version of Robin was killed by the Joker. So, which was supposed to tie in to BVS, where we see Robin's outfit where, you know, in a glass case memorializing him with ha 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 sprayed on it. So they were supposed to kind of like be melding it, this into like the whole world and stuff like that. But ultimately, Warner Brothers decided to go in a different direction. They wanted to be more like Fox, more like Disney. Well, more like Fox at the time. Do a Deadpool. And ironically, use popular music and comedic elements to elevate the film, much like Guardians of the Galaxy, which came out 2 years before this. James Gunn. So the movie comes out. Movie's fucking lampooned by critics.
It stinks. It stinks. It stinks.
Fans don't necessarily like it. And the only thing this movie did well was have a best-selling soundtrack. And that's about it. Until years later, 2019, when a group of people online decide to reveal tweets sent out by a director, James Gunn, that were painting him in a negative light, where he was quote-unquote gay-bashing. He was making jokes about a friend and blah, blah, blah. It's not much to get into because it was completely... While it was true, it was completely done in a way that was meant to purposefully cancel him, which caused Disney to fire him, which caused fans to backlash against Disney for firing someone who directed two movies that they essentially liked. And ultimately, his tweets weren't all that bad. I think we all said worse back in the early 2000s when his tweets were taken. And ultimately, Disney learned their lesson somewhere around 2 weeks later, and they were like, no, James Gunn, you're rehired. Come on back to the fold. Let's make Guardians of the Galaxy 3. And he said, whoa. But wait, I was offered the opportunity to make a movie with the other camp since I was fired, no longer under contract. I decided to make this Suicide Squad. I'm going to remake the Suicide Squad. And Disney went, that's fine. We're still super sorry. Go make that movie and please come back to us. And that's exactly what he did. He had a saying in an article that said, obstacles are opportunities. And that becomes an Easter egg in the Suicide Squad movie because Rick Flagg is wearing a yellow shirt, much like his comic book character, that has a rabbit on it, much like Bugs Bunny, who sits atop the Warner Brothers logo, which WB is also written on that shirt. And that rabbit is wearing a red cape, reminiscent of Superman or possibly Brightburn, holding up a sign that says, in Spanish, obstacles are opportunities. A direct line from the director of the successor to the Suicide Squad. So it all comes full circle. In the end, Warner Brothers wanted to make a movie that was more like Guardians of the Galaxy, more like Deadpool, ultimately end up taking what David Ayer made, which was never meant to be anything like that, completely trying to falsify a tone for the movie that they wanted, and then delivering a movie that was completely tone deaf because it tried to service two stories at the same time and never ultimately did either of them justice and did none of the characters justice as well, which ultimately led them to essentially attempting to reboot the movie with the same exact director who just happened to get fired from the competitor for completely bullshit reasons.
It was wild.
And that's the director who made the movie that they were trying to be like as much as possible. Fucking serendipity, man. I fucking love it. I love like that. Like
wild. I love that.
The story of 2016 Suicide Squad actually gets like elevated by the fact that James Gunn is now doing the Suicide Squad.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt.
But Jay, I did ask you to rewatch to watch Suicide Squad after watching the Suicide Squad so that we can compare and contrast it. And what'd you think after watching Suicide Squad again?
Well, like I said, the villains just aren't there.
No,
they're just not there. I mean, and that's such an imperative part of any movie. You need to have a strong one.
It is, unless you're the Suicide Squad, which also doesn't have a strong villain. However, I would argue it does. It has a bunch of strong villains, and they are members of the Suicide Squad.
Right. It's more properly handled.
Right. But this did far less development for the Suicide Squad characters. It it really hinged on this.
Yeah, and I think
ultimately about there were the Enchantress.
And there were some harsh, quick. Convoluted cuts narratively, story-wise, and character-wise in the very beginning. Not just with the introductions, but also with the story progression.
It was like $20 million in recuts.
Much into this deep dive, but like it's a flat out mess, and it doesn't make any sense. And you hear David Ayer's like pleas over the years and
pleading
like,
now.
Yeah, well, now it's just like it's his last hope.
Baked. Like a dog.
Put it that way.
It's for fans to get behind it and have movie. Warner Brothers make
it. It's not his movie whatsoever, and I understand that because
based on our new story, Warner Brothers doesn't have the interest in continuing to do director's cuts or anything like that.
Sure. It's not Warner Brothers is just not that kind of studio normally, but
just for one guy.
I said normally.
Right. They play that way for one guy. Just like I'm only gay for you, Jay.
That a boy.
They only do reshoots and they only do re-releases for Zack Snyder. It's the only cocktail sub for. Usually, Warner Brothers is playing the Dom, but in that case, all the sirs and all the king comments that were going around about Zack Snyder, they were like, you know what? I'll let him bareback me.
Just this once. Just to see how it feels. Yeah.
Although I do think that if HBO Max wasn't the burgeoning platform that it was at the time, that Zack Snyder's Justice League recut was announced, I don't think it would have happened, you know? And I think that's why they're staying away from David Ayer's cut, The Suicide Squad, because the improvement probably isn't all there based on our news story that we did earlier in this episode, but also the fact that they now have a firmly established platform that they have a clear idea for what type of content they want to deliver on it. They have a bunch of shit greenlit for the next like 2 or 3 years, and spending the additional money for a David Ayer cut to be released on there, even though he says it's completely done, it's not. I'm sure there's some post-production that has to be done. Several million dollars have to go back into the coffers to fund it. I think Warner Bros. Is ultimately like, we don't need it.
And they don't. Honestly,
the DC universe is going in a different direction. HBO Max is going in a different direction.
Especially,
we don't need you. We don't need this. We don't want to remind people of this.
When
we have the Suicide Squad out now, which is a far superior property.
My only rebuttal to that, David, is that there's no extra money to be spent on it. You just put it out there. On HBO Max, there's no harm.
So let's say they
it's
did
already
it,
done.
But the CGI
the
wasn't
cut is
done.
Out there. No, the cut's out there.
Apparently, the cut is out there. Apparently, the full
it's
cut,
out there.
Full CGI,
yeah.
full.
The movie is out there. It just needs to be literally slipped onto HBO Max.
But
that's
like
it.
I said with Zack Snyder's, it
and
does.
I guarantee, well,
it does stand to muddy the waters for the property that they've just built with James Gunn.
No. Hold on. I firmly believe that what you just said is not going to hold up. I don't think that they're going to be coming out with a sequel within any type of tight time frame whatsoever.
Right. Like I said in the last episode for the Suicide Squad review.
I think in a year, an air cut might come out on HBO Max.
I said
2023,
2024, there would be a The Suicide Squad sequel. Okay. So I didn't say anytime soon.
Perhaps.
So.
But I think it's perfect timing strategically if you bring this up in a year. The DVD will be out already for The Suicide Squad by holiday time. And it'll be a few months after that, plenty of breathing time, and then it can start revamp that fucking bullshit, you know, viral marketing as far as like the air cuts coming out.
So we talked about what didn't work with Suicide Squad 2016. Let's just talk about what did work, Jay. What worked for you for it? What did you like? Like, first off, we have a team called Suicide Squad where no one died.
I like the darker characters. I like the darker characters that I bought. You know, they were
which is a testament to David Ayer. It's obviously what he was going for with it, right?
More brash, more grounded, more scrappy, not out for the jokey licks.
I do like Will Smith's Deadshot. I like Will Smith in the role. I like the way he's portrayed and everything like that. One of the things like I thought was very interesting was the fact that Idris Elba was originally hired to replace Will Smith as Deadshot and reprise that role in that movie. However, it was both Idris Elba and James Gunn who said, like, well, wait, hold on. Maybe... in conjunction with a Warner Brothers producer, said maybe someday we might get Will Smith to come back as Floyd Lawton, as Deadshot. So let's make this a completely different character that's exactly like Deadshot, which is how we get Bloodsport in the Suicide Squad, which I think is fine. I think that's fine. I think it's nice to leave the door open while giving us a very similar type character. That's all well and good. And I would like to see Will Smith back as Deadshot. And I think other than Deadshot, I mean, the standout, the big thing to come from this is Margot Robbie's portrayal of Margot of Harley Quinn, which is spot on. It's exactly what I would picture a movie version of that character to be, given the modern comic book age. I fucking loved it. I thought it was amazing. I thought they did a better job of it with a female writer in Birds of Prey. I'm not saying Birds of Prey is a great movie, but at least the character was far better portrayed in that than she was in Suicide Squad, because Margot Robbie, you know, got to choose her own outfits and stuff like that. It wasn't overly sexualized, which, you know, I think is a problem with comic books and movies. So yeah, I don't want to get into that discussion too much. But
right. Well, personally, I think it's a mix for both movies. I'm talking about the Suicide Squad stuff. So Suicide Squad and the Suicide Squad, I think, you know, there's mixtures and there's moments and parts and bits in each movie that works and doesn't work for Harley Quinn, in my mind.
It's true. She does serendipitously re-show up after the helicopter crash, and then she's like, let's all go get a drink. And then she completely inspires everyone to continue on with the mission when she has no real reason to continue on with the mission other than she has nothing else to live for now that Mr. J's again rejected her.
Right.
And it's like, but I don't feel like we got the development from the character to sell that. But at the same time, I get that she is a motivational type character in that way because she's pretty. And we all like
her. And I think, I think her, you know, like the stuff in the beginning, like her jailbird scenes, I think are perfect. I do think that's a very much a Harley thing. Just like you see glimpses of that in The Suicide Squad when she's captured. And you see her behavior there. I think that's perfect.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, which is
like
a callback
that,
to this, right?
I think she uses those
gymnastic skills to escape in that movie.
And you see her seduction. You see her play of her looks and seduction slash her lethalness.
Her rotten tattoo on her chin is now missing, which was there in Suicide Squad and Birds of Prey, but rotten tattoo on her cheek is now gone in The Suicide Squad. Kind of dialing the character back a little bit from the David Ayer Warner Brothers original vision of it.
Yeah, yeah. It's a prequel reboot. No.
Exactly. Prequel reboot. Or a sequel reboot, but still a reboot in
either way. Yeah.
But ultimately, I think like
laser removal tattoos have gone a long way.
Over time, I've watched Suicide Squad several times, and I don't remember what my original review was for it. But
I got probably three views out of my under my belt. Yeah. Something
I would
like that.
I would say I'm somewhere around three or four. Yeah, I would say that. That's probably pretty close. I did rewatch it before reviewing the Suicide Squad, so I thought like it was interesting enough to talk about. We're not going into like Birds of Prey and shit like that, but at least which was born out of an idea that they had to do Gotham City Sirens, and they were building an entire universe around Harley Quinn, and they quickly dialed that back after multiple negative returns on other properties that they were doing and some fan backlash for overusing a character from a bad movie, and they decided to use her sparingly, and just how we wound up getting Birds of Prey and then ultimately now the Suicide Squad, which I think firmly puts her back in the good graces of Warner Brothers, and they will 100% continue the character as a result of that movie. Maybe not in her own solo adventures again, but probably most certainly in Suicide Squad sequels. But ultimately, rewatching it, just like I talk about Venom all the time, I think the bad stings less the more and more you watch something, and you ignore bad shit and focus on good shit. And where I may have been like a C or C minus on the original one, I think I would say firmly after watching Suicide Squad again with the recut, I'm at a C. I'm just at a straight C, not a C plus, just a C.
Yeah,
a
you can't go any higher than that. Really can't.
It's a fucking okay time waster. You know what I mean? It's an okay time waster. There's a few good things to
background
get out of it.
Movie. It's a background movie. You know, it's a background movie. If at best.
But it's nothing that the DC can put a feather in their cap and say, like, you know, you want more of this shit.
No.
They wouldn't have gotten this movie. Never would have gotten another entry into a Suicide Squad franchise if James Gunn wasn't hired and asked, you know, to do a Superman movie, in which he said, I have no interest in doing that. I did Brightburn. That was my take on a Superman. You don't want to see my take on this. Also, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, these are the three. They're called the Trinity within DC for a reason. It's because Warner Brothers has to be very protective of them, and James Gunn didn't want to work with characters that producers needed to protect. So instead, he chose to do Suicide Squad because he wanted to do a proper version of that movie, of that comic book property, and put it on screen. And he did a fantastic job of it, as you heard from our review. So ultimately, this movie retroactively gained some legs because of a prominent sequel to it, which, as I said in my review, doesn't completely ignore the original like you think it does, but it definitely never directly mentions it either. I would still be interested in seeing, and only these two characters come back. Obviously, Rick Flagg came back. Obviously, Harley Quinn came back, and Boomerang came back. I'm really only interested in seeing Will Smith's Deadshot come back. However, Will Smith does not like to appear in rated R movies. It's not his thing. It's not his wheelhouse.
True.
He's done rated R movies in the past. Most of the time, they are dramas, not action, comedy, sci-fi, comic book movies. So it would take probably a lot to get him to come back. But I would still be interested in him to come back without sacrificing what's been built now that the Suicide Squad is out.
I wonder if his flute has changed since his kids are now grown, and also, you know, he hasn't really done much recently, you know, as far as any kind of great success. So I think values, you know, sometimes don't change. You know, maybe if he really does firmly believe in keeping his brand PG-13.
Jay, I think it's values more so than his kids, because he's had these values since before his kids were even around. So
okay.
I would say it's more values than that, but yeah, that's not to say that's not out of the realm of possibility for him to come back. I think ultimately, like, after the Suicide Squad, does it make me more interested in an air cut? I would actually say no. You know, I've never really been for an air cut, but now after the Suicide Squad has come out, I'm firmly against it, because I think it only stands to muddy the waters a little bit. And I also think, like, ultimately, it's a step backwards for Warner Brothers, and they need to be looking forward. They've had so many missteps with their DC universe and stuff like that. I think it only serves them to move forward from this point on and not take a look back and not go back to this and not release an air cut at all. I think to completely downplay it and ignore
business hashtags, wise, I agree. Business wise, sense. I 100% agree.
I think as a David Ayer fan, I'd be interested to see in what he had in store. However, I'm fully prepared for it to not be great.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think they could fully put no money into it and just slip it onto HBO Max, you know, like I said, in a year or so. I firmly believe that it's not going to tarnish anything going forward within that franchise, but it'll just sort of, I think, make peace with the whole situation, I think, and just kind of move on going forward with on
ultimately the missteps were you hired a guy who's great at making rated R movies to do a PG-13 version of a squad that's called the Suicide Squad, where multiple members are supposed to die.
Look,
multiple
that was a big red flag. I still remember this day.
Yeah.
Like when we talked about that from the get-go years ago. I mean,
the trailer. 100%
say.
Well, we did,
but it was also a red flag. We're like, why the fuck is this a PG-13 movie, and this doesn't make any sense with David
Ayer doing
it. It
just reminded me of AVP. It should be a rated R movie.
It just didn't add up. And then when you see the movie, the final product, it makes sense. It
speaks for itself.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's it, man. We're not gonna belabor the point too long. Me and Jay just rewatched Suicide Squad, and it stings less. I'm at a C. Jay, what's your score for it, for Suicide Squad?
C.
Review? C.
C.
I would say so. I think there's moments that are absolutely fine. I think it completely misses on a lot of marks. However, it did deliver some good characters that we were at least interested enough to see go forward, and we will, and we did, and now they exist in the Suicide Squad, which is a far superior product that understands the property way better from a writer and director who understood more so what people are looking for. And I think this movie was greenlit at a time where Warner Brothers was thinking one way and was set for release at a time where Warner Brothers was thinking a completely different way. And they were based on what was popular in the media at the time. And it's just kind of a cautionary tale of just like, don't always go with the zeitgeist. Go with what you intended. It might have been better had they have just gone with what they originally intended. And it would have been mediocre, sure. But at the same time, it wouldn't have been so lampooned and caused them to been so shy about the movies they wanted to make.
It would have came across more authentic.
Definitely that. Definitely that for sure.
I think at this stage, I think the studios need to understand that the viewers are so much more intelligent with the whole game, where they can see through the fat. They can see through the bullshit.
Like we said in our review,
they need to be a little bit more transparent about it all. Yeah.
James Gunn proved that. He caught you up to speed with where all these returning characters were and new characters by, instead of doing word blurbs on the right side of the screen to tell you who each character was and what their powers were, he just kind of like threw it out there in very natural expositional dialogue, but still worked for the story and gave us enough context to go off of to understand a character's motivation. And Suicide Squad had zero character motivation. So other than do this or your head will blow up. And in the end, only like two Suicide Squad members died. So it was like, so there was no risk at all. This heroic decision they made had zero risk whatsoever because none of them were ever going to die. You always wanted to make more of this. And now you have, and you've decided to just let go. Just let go. And just standing back and letting someone do their fucking thing is ultimately what wound up being more successful than micromanaging and overarching the entire project. So that's it, man. We do want you to reach out to us. Let us know what you think of Suicide Squad now in hindsight. So you can reach out to us on our social medias. You can reach out to me on Twitter at SuperMoviePod. You can reach out to me on Instagram, SMBDave on there. You can also reach both of us by jumping on the hotline, just like our friend did earlier, and reach out to us at 267-590-9042. If you're international and you're unable to call that number, record a voice memo on your phone and email it to supermoviebrospodcast@gmail.com. Jay, where can everyone reach you?
Yeah, absolutely. Facebook, Super Movie Bros Podcast. On Twitter, J_SMB, and Instagram, Super Movie Bros.
And of course, we are part of a network. We are part of the Age of Radio podcasting network. Check out all the great shows as well as Super Movie Bros on there. It's ageofradio.org. Also, if you want content that me and Jay referenced in regards to a snafu that happened on a dating site and any other of the pre-roll shit that you guys hear or any other references that we dropped to the Patreon, if you want to be in on that conversation, you got to head over to patreon.com/supermoviebrospodcast. Have a great one. Cheers.